So when I speak about my trip to Mexico, I'm probably not going to say anything that's going to surprise you. It will become very clear shortly that I have not done a lot of traveling, so this was a big deal to me. But when it comes to politics, I'm not going to say anything that's new to you. I have some specific things I want to make sure everyone hears, but there's nothing too surprising. It's what you think. But first, I have to tell you how beautiful Mexico is. I didn't know that I was going to experience such beauty, and we started off in the most southern part of Mexico, the state of Chiapas, which looks like pictures I've seen of Hawaii with these groves of mango trees. We stayed at a hotel that was in a mango grove, and they would have to sweep up mangoes every morning because they were on the ground like acorns. It was magical. Groves of banana trees and wild pineapples and these jutting huge mountains covered in lush greenery. I just kept saying, this is what I've seen pictures of Hawaii look like. It's so beautiful. Just wild and wonderful, and reminded me of the movie Moana. It's so pretty. And it feels like there's indigenous art everywhere, these bright, bright colors just painted on everything. It's so lovely. I couldn't help but buy some art. I had to put it up so you see some of the colors. And in the rural countryside, very, very far south, close to Guatemala, there are the sweetest little chapels to Our Lady of Guadalupe, these little stucco, brightly painted chapels just dotting the countryside. It's incredibly beautiful. But that said, nothing that I learned about the politics of immigration was surprising. It was upsetting. But I'm going to stand here and tell you a lot of what you either already know or suspect or maybe just have in your peripheral vision. We have an immigration problem. I think that we all agree and understand that. And when I say we all, I think pretty much all Americans would agree that we have some sort of problem. It's just what the problem is we pretty vehemently disagree on. But one thing I want to acknowledge up front is that it's been about a month and a half since I've been back, and the news has been consistently going downhill since I've been back. So I'm going to explain the experience that I had regarding immigrants being separated from their children. But a few things have gotten quite a bit worse since I've been back, and one of them is that recent legislation has narrowed the definition of who is able to seek asylum. I just heard on NPR on the way here a new statistic about, what is it, only 42% of Americans support letting in people who are seeking asylum. You know, most Americans would prefer it be wealthy, highly educated people, and people seeking asylum are towards the bottom of what's approved by your average American. So things are difficult. And this leaves thousands of folks in the middle of the immigration process suddenly without any hope or help. And on top of that, Mexico just had a presidential election last week. It was riddled with violence. 130 political figures were killed just within the past year over this election. Many journalists were assassinated. There are headlines about, did the Russians involve in the Mexican elections? It's this whole mess. And you kind of have to look at it and say, why is it such a mess? Of course, why is our neighboring country, our next door neighbor, having so many issues? And unfortunately, many people would like to point to those very issues to explain why we need a bigger, stronger, taller wall. But that doesn't explain how things got the way that they are. I want to just set the ground that at the very bottom of everything, I know that as Unitarian Universalists, we do not believe the rhetoric that Mexicans are inherently bad people. All of us in this room can agree on that. Nor do we believe that their country is beyond hope. Far from it. In my 2 weeks there, it was very eye-opening. In preparation for the trip, this was a school trip, and we students had to read several books, one of which was Narcoland, which is about the drug cartels, El Chapo, the shocking amount of power and influence the cartels have within the Mexican government. So yes, drugs are part of the picture, but not really in the same way that it's often portrayed in the media. For instance, cartels don't care about a wall. We were told by several different agencies down there that the walls that already exist benefit the cartels, because as fleeing to the U.S. becomes more and more difficult and dangerous, it becomes a great money-making opportunity for the black market. The trip was with a group called Borderlinks, and it served as my cross-cultural education, which is one of the requirements for a master's in divinity and also required by the UUA. It's not a mission trip, and it's definitely not a vacation. I was there to learn. Borderlinks is a social justice organization that works very closely with the UU College of Social Justice. So we, you know, they're good guys. They're tightly linked with us UUs. And we were there for 2 weeks. The first week was at the southern border of Mexico, the border with Guatemala in the state of Chiapas, which I mentioned is so beautiful. And they took us to that border. The photograph on the front of the order of service is a photo that I took at that border. It's this lazy brown river in the jungle. We stood on one side of the river and looked at Guatemala and just watched people cross. You can see in the picture, there's a bunch of guys on a kind of handmade raft, just crossing. There were lots of people crossing. It was really as easy as that for them. These simple rafts, the men that owned the rafts, we asked, and they told us that they charged about 500 pesos per person to help people cross the river, which is about $25. It was not an intimidating river. It's probably easier to cross than the Susquehanna. I say that as someone who lives near the Susquehanna. I'm not sure what to compare it to out here, but it kind of came up to here on most people who were crossing, just crossing. It wasn't especially intimidating. It was pretty calm. The whole atmosphere was pretty calm for something totally illegal. The locals explained to us that the laws regarding illegal immigration aren't really enforced in that area. The back and forth trade just kind of benefits everyone, is what they were saying. Now, I'm not saying that it's a great thing. There are drugs coming and going. There's a lot going on there. What's interesting is that there are also legal ways to enter Mexico from Guatemala. So after they took us to the river, our guides took us to this shiny new crossing station that was on a big highway, complete with uniformed guards who got angry when we tried to photograph them. And we were informed that that whole crossing station and all the people and the uniforms and everything that were employed were all funded by U.S. tax dollars. You see, Mexico doesn't actually mind Guatemalans crossing the border so much as United States Americans do. After all, many of those people are not even especially from Guatemala. Some of them are, but a lot of them are coming from much further south, from Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, and their destination isn't usually Mexico. It is the United States. They're often seeking asylum, fleeing poverty, and their lives can be unbearable. Their home countries unimaginably unsafe. And in asking why and what it was going on, one word kept coming up, NAFTA. And here's how naive I was. All I really knew going into this about NAFTA was that Donald Trump said it was terrible. And so I thought if he doesn't like it, it's probably good, right? I don't know. I just assume whatever Donald Trump says, I'm going to think the opposite. But that turns out that's not the case at all. The people of Chiapas in Central America were generally not as well off as we are, but their lives were okay. Their lives were fine. Things used to be much better than they are now. People used to be able to make a living wage. The gangs and violence were on the periphery, much like in America. We have gangs and violence, but it's kind of on the periphery of most of our lives. We're lucky that way. We're privileged that way. But when we Americans took advantage of the free trade agreement, we contributed to a devastating economic crisis in Mexico and Central America. And maybe that's not news to you, but I didn't know that. So that's why people are fleeing. They're fleeing violence, and they're fleeing all sorts of oppression and coming to the United States, who caused the problem for the most part. And we put up walls. And it's actually kind of weird to be there and looking at these walls that already exist and think about that our current president was partly elected due to promising to build walls that are already there. It's a weird thing. There's lots of walls. There's not one big wall, but there's lots of different walls. And the second week of our trip, we were in northern Mexico, kind of on the border between Mexico and Arizona, spent time in Tucson, crossing and recrossing that border. We just were learning about that border. And if you've never been there, I had never been anywhere like Tucson. It's so different from what I just described in southern Mexico. It's kind of the opposite. Our border with Mexico there is dry, desert. What was shocking to me was I've never in my life been somewhere where there was no grass, like in the median or any, there's no grass. It's so strange. It's hot and it's dry, and you don't necessarily realize you're dangerously dehydrated until your friends point out that you're incoherent. This happened to me, and I was holding a water bottle in my hand at the time. The desert is no joke. And much of it has a wall, but there are places where the terrain is so impassable you can't build walls. You can't build a wall up the steep slope of a mountain, and you don't need to. The mountain is the wall. Yet somehow, by sheer force of will and the probability of large numbers, some people still make it through, but not nearly as many as used to. The anti-immigration people won't tell you this, but the net gain of Mexican immigrants in the past few years has leveled off to zero. People are going back as well. They go both ways. So the net gain is close to zero. As a side note, if you want to ask why people don't cross legally, which is a good question, and I would love to talk about that in another sermon, because actually I am the wife of an immigrant, and I have lots of opinions based in experience of the U.S. immigration system, and that's a whole nother conversation. But the gross, awful truth is anti-immigration policies are letting the desert do the dirty work, by which I mean people are migrating and dying in the desert. Are people who would otherwise migrate choosing not to because the way to migrate has become too dangerous? Sure, they are. Has that helped anything? Does that help people? No, they're still suffering. It does not alleviate suffering, and desperate people are still crossing in huge numbers. The number of people who make it to the other side is dwindling as we create a funnel with our walls, guiding people into some of the most dangerous terrain on earth. Terrain that's unmerciful, even by the strictest standards. Terrain that's monitored by vigilante American citizens. Self-appointed guards with their own guns who face no consequences for killing humans. Terrain that's capable of turning a human body to dust in a shockingly short amount of time, so that we're not able to get clear numbers of how many people are actually dying out there. This terrain is swallowing families whole. The desert is doing the dirty work of killing and disposing of hundreds of bodies. Thousands, we don't know. I warned you, this is upsetting, maybe not surprising. One of the women who spoke to us in Arizona, her name was Yasina. She was an undocumented woman who described a harrowing trip through the desert. Originally from El Salvador, she fled terrible violence because she was a gay woman. She made it all the way through Mexico and the harsh Arizona desert. The story was just heroic. She survived being attacked and thrown in a walk-in freezer for 3 days. Eventually, she was caught and put into an American detention center. And that, she told us, was where the real suffering actually began. The American detention center where she awaited her trial, Yesenia didn't know very much English. But she had memorized one key word, asylum. She knew that was her magic word, and she kept saying it. She knew she could seek asylum because of what she had been through and where she had come from. But as she waited, months went by, and the women in the detention center abused her. The guards physically abused her. And the other women, the other prisoners even, shunned her and stole her food so that she got close to starvation, all because she was gay. They told her as much. But volunteers visited Yesenia, gave her hope, and raised money to pay her bail. This woman, who entered the U.S. penniless and seeking asylum, was given a bail of $15,000. How ridiculous is that? But volunteers gave her a place to stay and paid her bail. And today, Yesenia lives undocumented still in Arizona. She's been there for 5 years, and she works for an organization that visits LGBTQ immigrants in detention centers. So this is the good news. After all of the heavy stuff, people are helping. There are volunteers. And the people who visited Yesenia and gave her hope and raised money for her were Unitarian Universalists. Our UU brothers and sisters down in Arizona are doing the hard work. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Tucson has volunteers who venture into the desert daily. They sign up for shifts like the rest of us sign up for potlucks. It's wild. They go into the desert and leave gallons and gallons of fresh drinkable water. And when they go back to pick up the empties, sometimes the water has been drunk and sometimes the gallons have been knifed and emptied by those vigilante guards I mentioned. But they keep doing it. They just keep doing it. And several of them from that particular church, from the UU Church in Tucson, are facing legal charges. Ridiculous charges like abandonment of property, you know, for leaving the water. But they keep doing it. There's this system in place, and you may have heard of it, called Operation Streamline. I had not heard of this, but just yesterday I saw it on it was covered on the front page of BuzzFeed. So it's starting to become more known. Operation Streamline, where undocumented immigrants are caught and brought into court in a huge group together, 30 and 40 at a time, all tried together and declared guilty together and deported together. Most of them don't even speak English, and it's not unusual for the immigrants to not even speak Spanish because many of them are escaping impoverished indigenous areas. So they're in court, tried as a group, even if they're all strangers to each other, in a language they can't comprehend. I've seen this. I've been in the room. I've seen this. They are tiny and starving and dirty. They have been literally plucked right out of the desert. They haven't been given anything to eat or drink. You can see they're coming right out of the desert, and they've been placed before a judge, and they're coached to say one English word, guilty. Then they will just be unceremoniously dumped back in Mexico. Many of them are small because they're starving, but some are so small they must be children. You see, the children lie about their ages, claiming to be 18 so they're not separated from their parents. It's a horrifying thing to witness, and our tax dollars support this. And Unitarian Universalists are there, taking notes, witnessing, speaking out when they can. It's another place where they go in shifts every day, 5 days a week, 9 to 5. That's when it happens. And there are Unitarian Universalists there the whole time. They're aware that if there's like legal things, if someone utters the word asylum, a UU can jump out and make a big deal and hopefully get that person some help. But they don't know those words. And there are people doing what they can. So you already know that we don't need more walls. You know that our tax dollars do contribute to untold suffering. It's what it is to be part of this system. You are already aware that this human suffering keeps our groceries inexpensive and keeps our lives the way they are. We don't need to turn around and look at the tags on all of our clothing to know that each item was made by someone who likely suffered in a faraway place. We know this. But what I want you to leave here today knowing is this. We are not helpless, and we are doing something. As a group, we are doing something. Every time even you choose the smallest fair trade coffee, something small, a vote for fair worker compensation, just speaking out against racism is doing something. You're helping. You're helping directly our Unitarian Universalist brothers and sisters in Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Texas are helping. And they are supported by the UUA, which we financially support. We are doing something. We are. If you feel moved to do something when you go home today, I encourage you to go to our denominational website, uua.org. Just do a search in the search box for the word immigration. There's so much information and ideas there. This class trip for my seminary, the seminary is a United Church of Christ, a Christian seminary, and I was the only UU in the group. And let me tell you, I have no words for how proud I felt when it was Unitarian Universalists who were speaking to our group again and again, and it seemed like every day, today we're going to hear from this group of UUs, today, you know, and explaining all of the work and all of the help and everything they're doing. I'm so proud of us. I'm so proud to be a Unitarian Universalist, and you should be too. I'm proud of the ways that we reach out and help. We actually take action. And you should be proud of yourselves. One of the things that I'm proud of right now is knowing that after everything I've told you today, you're thinking, what can I do? I can see it in your eyes. You'd like to help people. UUs are great people because what we have in common in this room right now, what we all have in common, is that we agree on the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We know it's up to us to stand up for those in need. It's our legacy as UUs. This is what UUs have been doing, standing up for those in need. And my hope is that in this sermon today, you've heard something that will strengthen your voice when you speak out. I say when you speak out because I know you will. UUs always speak out, and we speak out loud. And that's why I'm so glad to call Unitarian Universalism my home. And I'm so proud to be one of you. Amen.